We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But Ryan, let's get to our, we have some mailbag questions here. We're just going to wrap these up, knock these out as quickly as we can, but still giving good answers as best we can as well. Tyler Evans with a couple super chats. Thank you, Tyler. In your opinion, which four teams does the College Football Playoff Committee really want in the their playoff? Well, I mean, you want to take a shot at that, Ryan, first? I don't know if I say they want four specifically.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I was thinking more for like TV ratings, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
That's what it's about.
Alabama, they would love to get Alabama in if they could, right? Because people are going to watch Alabama even if they hate Alabama. Georgia's one, obviously, and they're deserving of being in. Ohio State's another because they present a different type of team. So Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. The last four, honestly, they probably want TCU in there, right? Because that's like the great story and people would watch it. No, you don't think so?
No, because the fan base isn't big enough. I don't think they care about stories as much as they care about money. And I don't think TCU brings as much money as Tennessee would, who's got a huge fan base.
Oh, good call.
You know,
and Tennessee still has that great offense, right, too. So
and same thing with Clemson. That's why LSU is where they are. They're trying to get LSU within striking distance that if TCU loses, they can justify putting them up, which will turn a lot of people off of the committee. I've been a defender of the committee for every year. This is the first year I'm really questioning things that they're doing right now. Like the only time I've ever really disagreed with the committee was the first year when they put Ohio State in over TCU, not even because I thought that they got it wrong, but I thought the process was jacked up and how they did it was jacked up. Like how are you going to have TCU ahead of Baylor 1 week knowing Baylor already beat TCU? Then Baylor beats Iowa State or TCU beats Iowa State 55-3. And then somehow you leap Baylor in front of them and say, well, it's because they won the head-to-head. They won the head-to-head 3 weeks ago, right? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, you leaped Ohio State in front of them. I just didn't like the process, even though I thought the four teams, I mean, Ohio State was very good that year. They went on to win the title. It was the way they went about it. Since then, I've agreed with their decisions every year. Some seeding things here and there, you know, Clemson being the one in 2017, I didn't necessarily agree with. But whatever, I thought they got the right four teams for most part. This year's the first year I'm like, dude, I'm seeing some really weird stuff in the rankings this year, some really weird stuff. So, I mean, I think they want two SEC teams is what I think they want. I don't think they're going to force the issue as much, but I think they want. And honestly, I don't think they're opposed to Clemson being in there either. I think because Clemson's got a great fan base, Clemson's still a moneymaker, you know, so I think they want LSU or Clemson to kind of jump in there. I think they want TCU to lose a game so they can justify putting Tennessee in. And I don't think they'd have a problem with Michigan being in. I just don't think they're going to put two Big Ten teams in there. The only way that they'll put two Big Ten teams in there is if Ohio State loses. I think Ohio State has a decent case for being in if Notre Dame wins out. That's the thing. That's another team I think they'd like to get in there too. I think part of the reason I think USC has a shot to get in is because they have one of the best remaining schedules. They got to play UCLA, they got to play Notre Dame, and then they got to play either Oregon or Utah. Mm-hmm. If USC runs the table, Their only loss will be to a Utah team that this committee clearly thinks very highly of by a point, potentially get a rematch against Utah. They'll have beaten Notre Dame. They'll have beaten UCLA. And 12-1 USC with that market, with the title game being in Los Angeles, what's the best way to get West Coast fans interested in the playoff? Because if USC's not in it, they're not going to give a rip, even if the title game's out there, is to have your team, your hometown team, have a shot to play for the title. I absolutely think they would boost USC up. Now, we could argue, does USC deserve to be in there? We could have that conversation. I personally think if they run the table, they would have a legitimate argument to be in. I mean, there's not a lot of teams that are going to be able to beat UCLA, Notre Dame, and then either Utah or Oregon three straight games, other than teams that are already going to be in, Ohio State, Georgia, that kind of thing. And let's say Ohio State beats Michigan. An 11-1 Michigan with a win over Penn State and then nothing else is going to get in over a USC team who will have beaten Notre Dame, who will have beaten UCLA, who will have beaten either Oregon or Utah? No way. No way. Yeah, okay. No way they're going to be able to justify that. No way. And so now Michigan and USC's resumes now are very similar. Very similar. But USC has a lot left on their schedule that can get them some really impressive results, right? I don't think they're going to do it. At least I don't hope that they don't do it. But I think they have a shot too. And I think the committee would love to put USC in there. Like, I think their dream scenario is that USC is one of the teams that runs the table and that TCU gets knocked off. I do.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tyler Evans, what was your favorite year of recruiting?
This year, because it's my first year covering it. They're easy one.
Yeah.
I actually don't know off the top of my head. I mean, that's an interesting question.
Probably 2013, just watching that class get put together with Jalen Smith and getting Max Redfield late and Cole Luke and Malik Zaire and Greg Bryan and Torian Folston and Will Fuller and just kind of watching that. Mike McGlinchey was in that. That was a heck of a class, man. Good night. That was a heck of a class.
It was, yeah.
That was probably the one just because of – because you were enjoying the season, and then also you're watching them just land this big recruit after big recruit. And I'll be honest too, Ryan, I wasn't covering the team that year, so I think I kind of enjoy it more as a fan than the ins and outs and the ups and downs and everything kind of going on. I think is where I got it from. You know, kind of I think enjoyed a little bit more that year. So probably that would be my favorite year. Following the 2008 team was like the 2008 recruiting class was a little. Like, it was a great class. It was probably better than the 2013 class, but it got put together during a 3-9 year. So it just kind of took some of the fun off of that recruiting class because you're like, God, this team stinks.
Yeah.
You know, so, that was probably mine.
2023 has been fun, though, because, I mean, when you think about it, Brian, full picture, like, this could be a gigantic leap for Notre Dame going forward. Like 2023 class could be a huge part of hopefully the ascension that the program takes, which, I mean, it could be a historic class when all said and done. I do believe that.
Mm-hmm. Next question from Robert Bishop says, am I detecting a little bit of frustration in the offensive play calling from Brian? Yeah. My sarcasm meter was up pretty high this week. Yeah. I'm very frustrated by it just because it's like, it's simple stuff, man. It's like, we're not even asking them to reinvent the wheel or reinvent themselves. It's just stuff that will build on what you're doing. It's just the, it's just been frustrating, to be honest with you. It's been really and then we see little glimpses of it, and then you're like, okay, build on that, and then they go away from it. Like, you know, it's frustrating. Let's get Irish Blooded asked this question, Ryan. Is there anything you need to see this week in the BC game that you hope they have prepared for next week against USC? Let me answer this, Ryan, and you tell me if you disagree with this. I think that Notre Dame needs to get some momentum, but it's not an absolute must, because we have seen this team be able to compartmentalize winning and losing. Mm-hmm. And it's been really strange to watch it happen. You watch them play the way they did in back-to-back games against Marshall and Cal, and you're thinking, yeah, defense better be on top of their game next week against North Carolina, and then they just come out and play like gangbusters. You know, play right. Two really good games in a row against UNLV or against North Carolina and BYU, and then you just play like garbage against Stanford. And there really wasn't anything about the Stanford or UNLV games that gave us any indication that they were going to go into Syracuse and do what they did to Syracuse, right? So this and then you play great against Clemson, you're thinking they've turned a corner, and then you go do what you did against Navy. This team is just – I think they're going to be up for the USC game because it's the USC game, and that's just what this team does. I think that momentum that we've discussed gives them a better chance of winning. But with this team, Ryan, I don't think there's anything that's an absolute must in regard to if they don't do it, they're going to lose. But I do think momentum is the one thing that they need to give them, and even it enhances their opportunity to go in there and play well offensively next week against USC. What say you?
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. I think that, like you said, this has been a team that has just kind of turned that switch on to play against the best teams. So there's nothing that's a must. I agree with that. It would be nice, because I feel like Notre Dame has done a better job of being more sound from a pass coverage perspective. So it would be nice to just see them kind of continue that trend this week, you know, and not give up any big plays off of miscommunication or a broken coverage or anything like that, because that would make you nervous against going against the USC team, right? Like giving them, because they're a potent passing attack alone, so I don't want to give them anything easy, right? So it would be nice if they just go into Boston College, not have any coverage busts, be consistent, have good eye discipline, like that type of stuff. That'll make me feel better. But to your point, Brian, I don't think that's a must, because Notre Dame has turned it on against good teams.
Yep, we're on the same page. Next one from Joseph Hall. Good one, Irish Blooded. Joseph Hall says, what happens if the quarterback is injured in the first quarter? Can Notre Dame win with a second-string quarterback? Notre Dame is already winning with a second-string quarterback. Can Notre Dame win with a third-string quarterback? I mean, honestly, the way that the second-string quarterback has been playing recently, I mean, they don't need the quarterback to – I mean, Steve Angeli can go in there and manage a game, in my opinion, and hand the ball off. And, you know, can they beat Boston College that way? Yes. Can they beat USC that way? I don't think so. But I don't know if they can beat USC if Drew Pine doesn't play better. I don't think they can do to USC what they did to Clemson. I don't think they can replicate that, because this team will be able to score. USC will be able to score. So BC, yes. Yes. I mean, honestly, they could beat BC with Ron Paulus Jr. if the defense plays its game. I mean, honestly, he can just turn around and hand the ball. I mean, I'm serious. He can hand the ball off and throw a slide route to Michael Mayer, you know, and they could win 20-13. Mm-hmm. USC is a different story. You know, it's a different animal, in my opinion, Ryan.
Completely agree. I think that, like you said, there is a – and this is – I don't think that this is the right way to go about it, but there is a reality where Notre Dame just runs duo all day and they beat Boston College, right? Like, they're good enough to do that. But I don't think that long-term that's the best way to go about this football game. But it is possible, for sure. As long as your quarterback doesn't kill you, if he can just manage a game and stay out of his own way and not trip over his own feet, like, that's – yes, they are talented enough to beat Boston College, even with their third or fourth stringer, to your point.
Mm-hmm. Next question is from Ed, and Ed says, if I were BC, I'd come out exactly how Navy played defense in the second half and make Pine beat me. Why won't they do that? They don't have anything to lose. Couple reasons. One, number one, Ryan, is Navy did that because that's who Navy is.
Right.
Navy also has a very good run defense, which made it easier for them to make Drew Pine beat them. And in the first half, he did. Right. I mean, Drew Pine beat them with his arm because his arm is why they had such a big lead in the first place. Right. Right. And they struggled to hold on to it. Number one. Number two, they do have something to lose because Notre Dame will have prepared for that all week. This is why you don't just repeat a game plan that happened a week before, because otherwise you could say that why didn't the team that played Oklahoma the next week just repeat what Texas did? Because the team is different. That's not who BC is. BC's not a heavy stunt pressure type of team, and they don't have the quickness, the foot quickness on the first two levels that Navy has. They're bigger, stronger guys. That's not who they are. So they wouldn't be able to replicate that as effectively as Navy did either. And Notre Dame will be better prepared for it. So that's why. And that's why you don't see teams like, you know, why didn't everybody that played Texas, Alabama after Texas do exactly what Texas did? Because it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way in football.
And Boston College also has a lot to lose from their coaching perspective too, because if Jeff Hafley has a bad performance, I mean, who knows how long that situation is going to last.
If they get blown out by Notre Dame, and then last game of the year is an interesting one because they're home against Syracuse.
Well, late goose egg against Syracuse, it's like...
Yeah, he could be out of a job. I mean, I'm serious, like, which is crazy to think about given how I thought he started and the hype that they had about him coming in. It could get a little bit ugly. We have a question from our resident Ohio State fan, Archer. It says, Brian, what's the preview for Ohio State and Maryland? I mean, honestly, Maryland's kind of back to being who they were. You know, they start off 6-2. They looked, it started over a month ago when they lost to Purdue at home. They beat Indiana simply because they have better athletes. They barely beat Indiana. They barely beat Northwestern, won by a touchdown just because they have better athletes. Then they got embarrassed by Wisconsin, just out-physicaled by Wisconsin, out-physicaled by Penn State. And I think Ohio State is a team, to me, that I don't know how Ohio State's going to prepare for this game. I don't. I don't know what kind of mental space Ohio State is going to be in. I have a feeling Ohio State's going to kind of come out and rip them apart early. They're on the road. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of come out, be locked in. I think that there's a lot of Michigan love going on right now, and people are kind of picking apart every little thing Ohio State does now. I think Ohio State kind of comes out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and if they don't, I'm going to get a little bit worried about this Ohio State team, to be completely honest with you, Ryan. So I'm very curious how they do it, but I just don't think they have a quarterback that's nearly consistent or good enough to do what's needed to be done to do what happened a few years ago when, like, that Anthony McFarland team just went up and down the field on Ohio State. I don't think this Maryland team has that all around. Like, that team had good pass catchers and a great running back. This team has really good pass catchers, and that's it. Yep. And that's why I just don't think Maryland has a chance to be competitive in this game. The only way this is a close game is if Ohio State just comes out like they don't want to be there. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, because, I mean, to your point, Maryland can out-athlete a lot of teams, but if your recipe to beat Ohio State is to out-athlete them, it's probably not.
That's why they got smacked by Penn State last week, because Penn State's got athletes. Yeah. I mean, they have athletes, and that's why they embarrassed Maryland last week. I mean, really embarrassed Maryland last week.
Yep, that was an ugly game, man.
Yeah. Anthony Solomon says, Brian, if the live game works, do you foresee it happening again next year during one of the big games? It just depends on where the big game is at. The reason this particular situation is going to work is because it's a game in California. I'm not going out to California. We're not in a really situation where I can pay people to go out to California, nor would I want to do that. So, and it's after Thanksgiving. So we made the decision to not cover the game live for several different reasons. And so, hey, let's try it. Let's have some fun with it. Is it something that we'll do a lot more next year? Depends on how this goes.
Yep.
Look, this is a business. I mean, we're doing it partly for fun, right? Because we're going to be chatting, texting, and doing all that stuff. It's kind of like what Sean Davis has said. This is going to be a chance for people to kind of get a glimpse into how we communicate during the game. But instead of doing it through text, we're going to be doing it here. But it's not something we're going to necessarily do consistently. I have work to do during games, and this is kind of after Thanksgiving. And, you know, a lot of times for home games, we're at the games. You know, for the Syracuse game, Ryan and I were both there at the game. We couldn't have done it that way. This one is just a bit unique. But again, if it makes enough money, and then yeah, there may be a business decision that needs to get made about, okay, what do we do? Because it's also twofold. It's not just, well, this does really well, but what if this does really well, but the post-game show is not as viewed as much because people are already getting our thoughts in this game? Well, the post-game show is our best moneymaker on YouTube. So it's just a lot. I mean, these are business decisions, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, Anthony, and that's kind of the thing you ask is, we're going to do it for some fun, but as far as making it, this one we're doing for fun. Making it a permanent thing would have to be because financially it just makes too much sense to not do it. And, you know, that's kind of, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, that's where it's at. Because at the end of the day, we still have a business to run. And I try to make as many decisions as I can that are very customer friendly. It's why our prices are what they are. It's why we haven't raised prices. It's why we are, you know, do a lot of things that we do. But at the end of the day, I still have, you know, bills to pay and a business to run. And so if it does well enough, then we'll certainly look at it. Even with all the logistical issues, certainly look at it. Irish Blooded said, do you expect Kenny Minchie to announce at Notre Dame this week? Is this a visit and then announcement down the road? If things go well this weekend, all I'm going to say is we don't expect his recruitment to be drawn out too much. Beyond that, I don't really feel comfortable saying Irish Blooded because then you start kind of getting into the whole, well, now we're kind of giving away some of the secret sauce of what this kid plans to do, and that's just not really what we do. But if things go well – it's not a secret to say if things go well this weekend, we think he's going to pick Notre Dame. That's just kind of obvious. So we're not going to insult you that way, but the particulars we're just not going to get into right now. Rob Didoff with a question. Rob asks Brian and Ryan, when is it the appropriate time to postpone, reschedule an NCAA football game due to bad weather? I always thought the 2016 NC State game should have been rescheduled before a team gets on a plane and goes there. I mean, once the team kind of goes there, you're kind of like, okay, barring like a landfall hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake or some like major natural disaster, I think once a team has kind of got on the road and gone, then it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Regarding this week's game, there's no reason to cancel this game. I mean, it's football. This isn't baseball. This isn't soccer where the game is impeded by a ton of snow. I don't think the snow is going to be such that it's unsafe to get there. Right. Mm-hmm. And if fans can't get there, that's okay. All you really need is the two teams, you know, I mean, they played a whole season with no fans. So by choice, and guess what? They still were able to play football. So as long as it's safe for the teams to get there, then I don't think this game is any danger of it, nor is Rob necessarily saying that. I'm just inferring a little bit from it, but I mean, I think if weather is a concern, it should happen before the teams get on the plane. Notre Dame should never have been allowed to get on a plane to go play that football game. Yeah. Should never happened. And
it all comes down to safety for me. I mean, if the players, unless it's a situation where your players legitimately have safety concerns for not playing, then that's the only time that a football game should be called off. Like snow, I mean, you know it, Brian. I know you were a quarterback, so it might be a little different, right? But like, who doesn't want to play in a snow game, man? Who doesn't want to play in bad weather? Like, I know, that's what I'm saying. Besides for the quarterbacks in the room, like as a linebacker, defensive player, I'm like, man, I want it to snow. I want it to be cold. I don't want to wear sleeves. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff, man.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you need your hand warmer. And
Yeah, no, I had to one like around, like swinging around like I'm cool when I'm ready to put my hand over the center.
Yeah,
it's no fun. No fun. All right. Irish Chi-Town says, Brian, which college football teams have surprised you the most this season? Ryan, do you want to take a first crack at that one?
I mean, it's gotta be TCU, right? Like that's number one. I thought they'd be better under Sonny Dykes because the offense was just so bad over the last couple years.
Great hire. Yes. But I thought maybe tap out at 9-3, great hire, Ryan. Not like, you know, 8-4
Yeah, I was thinking 8-4. I was like 7-5, 8-4 first year. That's a great starting point, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're talking about them potentially being in the college football playoff. Like, it's insane, man. So it starts with TCU. You know, when I originally saw this question, I thought that said CFL teams. I'm like, Canadian football still happening?
Sorry, don't have an opinion on that, buddy.
I know Nathan Rourke's really good for what that's worth. But, I mean, TCU, man, that's the number one. Is for me. UCLA, I thought UCLA would be pretty good this year, but they have played even better
I need to see how they first, Ryan. That's my thing. I need to see how UCLA finishes first before I can say that they're a surprise. Because they're 8-2 right now. They play USC at home and then at Cal. Yeah. If they lose at home to USC, even if they beat Cal next week, you're like, they went 9-3. That's a one-game improvement on last year, right?
Sure, sure.
So I gotta see them finish. I think
finish.
Same with Washington, right? Like, part of me wants to say Washington because I knew they had players, but okay, do they beat Colorado and Washington State these next 2 weeks? And or if they do lose to Washington State, is it at least a close game and they finish 9-3? That's a really good turnaround that I thought is a little. I thought they'd win because they had talent, but I thought again, I thought like 7-5, 8-4, 9-3 is not that much of an upgrade over that. But if they go 10-2, all of a sudden you're like, yo, they did some things like that I thought that they weren't capable of. So. And I'll be honest, go ahead.
I was just going to say two surprises in a bad way because surprise does not have to be a positive, right? One is Jimbo Fisher with Texas A&M. I did not think they were going to be this bad.
We thought they were overrated, but we thought 8-4, 7-5 was what
I thought that was the bar for them. 8-4, maybe 9-3. Like, cool. The other one's Oklahoma. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be great, but I didn't think they would be this bad, man. Like, they're a bad football team.
USC, if they win out, will be there for me. If UCLA, even if they lose the Pac-12 title game and go 11-2, that's a big surprise. I thought they'd be more of an 8-4 team. Now, what they've been 8, and this is why I say I need to see the next couple weeks play out, because if they lose these next two games, then they're pretty much right where I thought they'd be, because there's been some teams in the league that are down. And so I need to see how the season finishes. So there's some Pac-12 teams that to me are up in the air. I'll even say Tennessee's a surprise for me. Now, we predicted a breakout season for Tennessee. We thought they'd have they were my surprise team of the year, but they've surprised me even more. They've been even better than I thought that they were going to be, Ryan. I think that's another one, even though they were our kind of our breakout pick. And look, I'll give credit where credit is due. LSU's been better record-wise than I thought they'd be. I did not think they'd be centered 8-2 in the West champs. I did not think they're going to be Bama. So props to Brian Kelly for getting that team, you know, kind of rolling. And now they've had some good luck. If we're going to be completely honest with you, you have to be real about that. They had some good luck in that Arkansas was just a completely devastated team by the time they played. You know, there's some other teams in the division that just aren't that good. The schedule hasn't been that tough. You know, Florida's not as good as people thought. Right, yeah. they might be, but beating Ole Miss and Alabama in back to back games is not something I thought that team was capable of. I did predict them to beat Ole Miss, but I did not think they were going to then go beat Alabama. So props to them; they're a surprise. Now again, they got to finish, but I expect them to beat UAB and Texas A&M. If they lose one of those two games, and all of a sudden it takes a lot of the shine off. Is there anybody else that's been kind of a negative? Nebraska just completely fall on their face again surprised me. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought Nebraska had a chance the way that they lost games last year, they were competitive. They got some transfers in. You know, the kid from TCU that we've talked about, the DN from TCU that was their best pass rush last year went to Nebraska. Yeah. You know, Casey Thompson's not great, but you kind of realize maybe Adrian Martinez wasn't the problem. You know, really was Scott Frost that was the problem, you know? I mean, they're bad. And they're bad. They're really bad.
Arkansas is a disappointment for me. I know they've been dealing with injury, but like they just have not been great.
See, that's why they're kind of an asterisk for me, Ryan, because of that. He's in year three. I don't expect the roster to be in such a great place that they can handle all the injuries that he's had to deal with.
It's fair.
That's why I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass this year.
You literally lost Arkansas at some points this year. You lost your two most important football players, lost your quarterback, and then Jalen Catalan was your best defensive player by far coming into the season, and he's been out the majority of the year too. So it's been tough for Pittman.
North Carolina's a team that was my breakout. They were a team that we said in the offseason, Ryan, could be a surprise team on the schedule. I didn't think 11-1 run away with the Coastal was that. I mean, they're a surprise team for me. But the biggest surprise for me, there's one good and one bad. The big surprise for me in the ACC is Mike Elko and the job he's done at Duke. Even if they lose their next two games, 7-5 is a huge improvement over what they were. And I don't think they're going to lose both of their next two games. I think Duke's going to at least at worst go 1-1 against Pitt and Wake Forest. So he's done a phenomenal job. And surprisingly, the negative is I predicted Miami to win the Coastal.
They've been bad. Yeah.
And they're terrible.
Yeah.
And they may not be bowl eligible, Ryan. That's, I mean, there's wild, a legitimate chance that Miami is not going to be bowl eligible this year. Think about it. They're 5-5 right now. They play Clemson this weekend, and then they play Pitt at the end of the season. It's not a given that a physical team like Pitt, because the one thing I'll say about Pitt, they have issues. They're a physical football team. And Miami has not handled that very well. They have not handled physicality very well. So, and if what you and I think may happen, which is this team is going to kind of pack it in, they're going to lose to Pitt in the last game, because there's going to be nobody at that game. If they get beat by Clemson, there's going to be nobody that game. Like, we could get sideline tickets for $10 at that. I would be one, you know what I mean? Bet you day of if we wanted to go to that game, which I wouldn't.
Dude, but Miami fans are some of the loudest on Twitter, and then they never go to the games. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's so
well, and then they get real quiet when their team sucks, right? Because that's what Miami fans do. They're front runners. Florida State, if they win out, which they have a great shot of doing against Louisiana and Florida, is a year ahead of schedule for me for what I thought Mike Norvell could do. I thought he'd be like an 8-4 year this year, and then, you know, then kind of, but 9-3 with win, a blowout win over Miami, beating LSU. Florida State's been a really good team this year. They got to finish, though. Because if they finish the year with two SEC wins, think about what that's going to do for their recruiting.
Yep.
Like, we got two SEC wins this year. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be – and a blowout win over Miami. That could be it. So those are some of the teams, Ryan, for me that have been good surprises. Not a lot, not too many. Just you mentioned Oklahoma. You know, they're Virginia Tech being this bad is a little bit of a surprise. I didn't think they'd be very good. I thought they'd be like a 6-6 kind of team. They're really bad. Really, really bad.
They're going to upset Liberty this week, says me.
They need it. They need it. They really need it. Outside of that, some of the other surprises are more just individual units. I didn't think Iowa's offense would be this bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't think they'd be good, but I didn't think they'd be this bad. But, you know, nothing else has really shocked me a ton, to be honest with you. I mean, at Pac-12.
We are sitting here and Virginia Tech is a 10-point underdog to Liberty? Like, can that sink in for a second? That is absurd, man. I saw that line, and I'm just like, I understand that Virginia Tech's terrible, but, like, we are at a point in our life that Liberty is a 10-point favorite over Virginia Tech. I just can't fathom that.
It's not – I mean, and yeah, it's a home game for Liberty, but, look, Lynchburg and Roanoke aren't that far apart.
Right.
You know, like, no. You're absolutely right. There's no excuse, no justification for that to be the case.
No.
And, yeah, it's actually a 10-point game. I didn't even look. It's down to 9.
Okay. I got it at 10.
No, that's bad. No, I'm saying that's not any better.
No.
Wow. Guess, I mean, there's it's only been bad. Enough betting on Virginia to swing that by a point. Oh my goodness. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Robert Bishop, is Jerkovic playing or is it the Moorhead kid? They haven't announced that yet, but the latest that we heard was that Jerkovic was doubtful. Now, is that legit or is that Jeff Hafley playing mind games? I don't know the answer to that, but I'd be a little surprised if Jerkovic played, to be completely honest with you. I really would. Robert Bishop also asks or says, and then kind of asks, I think Brent Venables is a great defensive coordinator and a good recruiter, but I don't think he's a very good head coach. Agree or disagree?
I literally said the same thing, Robert, when the hire happens. It's nothing against Brent Venables. Some guys are great defensive coordinators and just not head coaches. For whatever reason, he never gave me a vibe of like head coach, CEO. Like, that's just not the vibe he gives off to me. Now, if he fails at Oklahoma, there will be many teams that will be suitors for Brent Venables to come run their defense. Great defensive guy, really good defensive mind. I just don't think he's a head coach. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I just what I think.
Yeah. Now, again, it's early, and we have seen guys that had never been head coaches before struggle early. Dabo struggled early. But I just, the concern I had was I didn't think he had the temperament to be a head coach.
Right.
That's the concern. And Dabo had the temperament to be a head coach. He's a rah-rah guy. Brent Venables is a little out there. He's got some like Bob Diaco to him. You know what I mean, Ryan? Like he's got like, what did he say? What are they going to shove in their mouths? What? Like, water remember hose. That? Yeah.
Water hose, yeah. Oh, fire hose. It was a fire hose in their mouth. Yeah.
Like, okay, dude, do you know what a fire hose would do to your face? You know what I mean? Like,
you would not be just, looking pretty after that.
He does some really weird things, and you're just like, dude, I don't know if this guy's got it. But again, it's early yet, and I don't want to completely write him off. He's, you know, it's been a rough year. He lost a lot of players to the portal because of Lincoln Riley took a lot of dudes and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I get it, but they've been underwhelming. But I'll say this. He did show me here's why I'm not ready to go there yet, Ryan, because when they had lost some games, consecutive games, and got embarrassed in doing so, he kind of went into the team. The report is that he went to the team and was like, you know, kind of went off on him. If you don't want to be here, leave. And they responded with a really good performance the next week against Kansas and then beat Iowa State the next week. So he showed me the ability to rally the troops for a time. And then, of course, they lost at home to Baylor and then lost to West Virginia. So it was like a really brief, like, okay, you got him back going for a minute. And, you know, but then they kind of faded again. So, but overall, I'm just not I'm not a believer, but I'm at least willing to say, hey, let's give them at least 2 years to kind of put at least some bit of a stamp on them a little bit. So, and then the last one, Ryan, here, we're going to end with a hot take from Brandon Plensner. His hot take is Notre Dame will finish with a better record than USC. So right now, USC is 9-1. Notre Dame is 7-3. So what this would have to be is Notre Dame wins their next three games, including a win over USC, and they would win their bowl, which would include their bowl game. It also would mean that USC is going to lose the rest of the games they have left. That means you lose to UCLA, lose to Notre Dame, and then lose a bowl game. Neither is out of the question. I just feel like with USC's firepower, they're going to at least get one of them. I agree. Especially, Ryan, if they lose to UCLA and Notre Dame, because then they won't get as good of an opponent in a bowl game.
Right.
Like, I will say that.
You could sell me that they end with the same record. Well, not the same record, because they'd be in the Pac-12 championship, right? But you could sell me that they would both have 10 wins at the end of the season, and I would believe you, because I think that Notre Dame definitely can win the last two games, and I think that they have a chance. I mean, it depends what the draw is, but we'll see what happens. I mean, USC, I think it's not going to happen, because I think USC is going to win this week against UCLA. So I think it's going to probably push to 11 wins is most likely USC for me. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. I just think that it's highly unlikely.
I don't know if I'd say highly unlikely. It just – I'm not predicting it. Because, again, you and I both predicting USC to win this weekend, which eliminates that as an option unless – I mean, yeah, there's no way. There's no way Notre Dame can get in the college football. The only way Notre Dame could do it with USC winning this weekend is if the most insane stuff happens the next 2 weeks. Michigan loses to, I mean, it would just have to be, you have to like Michigan loses to Illinois and Ohio State. Like North Clemson loses to Miami this week. And then beats North Carolina, LSU gets beat by UAB or A&M and Georgia. You know what I mean? Like so much TCU would have to lose twice for Notre Dame to have any kind of chance. Like I just don't – I don't know if there's enough craziness for Notre Dame to get in the playoff. And I think that would be the only way Notre Dame could get more than USC because they'd need the extra game.
Right.
You know, and I just don't think that. I don't think it's going to happen, but –
The conference championship element throws a wrench into the hot take, but I respect it, Brandon,
because they could lose this weekend to UCLA and still get in the conference championship game. Right. It's not out of the possibility that happens. Right.
Exactly.
So, Yep.
We're just going to have more cracks at it. And they have a couple games over Notre Dame right now. So makes it tough.
So Tommy Guns really, really wants this question answered, Ryan. John Madden, Paul Brown, Vince Lombardi, and Newt Rockne. Rank them in order. That's good. Want them as a coach for just 1 year.
On the college level or NFL level?
I mean, I don't want any of those guys right now for the modern game. I mean, three, all of them are, they're all passed away. In all seriousness, though, you know, the one that I would probably go with, Ryan, is Paul Brown, because he ran the most modern offense.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy that kind of gave Bill Walsh the sort of the impetus to kind of develop the West Coast a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's probably the where I'd go, is because he's the guy that runs, is the closest to John Madden's probably second in regard to guys that run an offense that would be the most translatable.
Oh, you don't want to, I mean, come on, man, but Lombardi be like, we're going to make a seal here and a seal here. We're going to hit the out. Yeah. No?
I would love for Notre Dame to actually do things where they're pinning and pulling and creating seals. And pull, that'd be phenomenal, right?
But pause power trap or whatever you called that play. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, yeah, I'd probably go with Paul Brown or Madden, you know, as long as they're bringing the coaching staffs that they had with them, it'd be the close. Because I could say, okay, give me Paul Brown, and then my offensive coordinator is a young Bill Walsh, you know? So,
sure. I'd probably go John Madden.
John Madden.
Yeah. I'm a big vertical passing game guy. They like to do that stuff back then,
now,
you know?
Keep in mind who you'd be doing the vertical passing game with right now.
It's all right.
So I might have to change my opinion and go Newt Rockne. I'm going Newt Rockne. Nope. Time out.
Run the triple option, huh?
They do not run the triple option. What are you talking about?
Single wave. What do they run back then?
Basically, it's four running backs. Give me four running backs. I'm gonna have Chris Tyree taking the snap. My Estime. They're gonna do the shift with Estime, Diggs, and I'm gonna go. Let's see here. Who's my fourth guy gonna be? It's not going to be Jabron Payne because he's a young buck. I'm going to preserve the season of eligibility. I'm going Braden Lindsey's going to be my third back. He's my speed.
You're
going
to run double. Yep. Are you running the full house, or are you running like a double tight power eye? I'm not double tight, double wing power eye.
Dude, do you not know what Newt Rockne did? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I remember Newt, man. I've seen the videos. I've seen the videos.
You know, they're not doing any of those things. What I'm saying is this, however, is for the personnel of the Notre Dame football team to get your best 11 on the field, you got to take the quarterback off. That's all I'm saying, right?
Could you imagine?
They don't use they don't use the receivers anyway. You know what I mean? So they can still throw, they can have one receiver outside. So give me Tobias outside, give me Michael Mayer at tight end, and then give me Lindsey, Estime, and Diggs at running back, and then give me Chris Tyree as my single wing quarterback.
Could you imagine the triple option with
they didn't Estime run the triple option back?
Could you imagine it?
I will say this.
Yes.
Audric Estime would have been a monster in Lou Holtz's offense. A monster. Like, could you imagine if they were running it wasn't the triple option. It was the power option. Okay. They did it out of the eye. Okay.
Yes.
And weren't running the veer. But could you imagine, though, if they had, like, you know, I'll take a guy that you like. Jeff Sims at court. Now, I don't like Jeff Sims for this off, but Jeff Sims and Lou Holtz's offenses, athletic, big arm. And that kind of what he liked, right? But if you could take him at quarterback with Audric Estime at fullback, and then Logan Diggs and Chris Tyree as your rotation at running back, because you know Lou loved using a speed guy, and then you'd have Braden Lindsey to one side and Tobias Merriweather another side, and then you have Michael Mayer at tight end. You know what I mean? Like, you'd get some really great option plays where Chris Tyree is you know, getting the speed options, or they're going speed option right, and all of a sudden you're flipping it to Braden Lindsey on a reverse. Oh, boy. Throwing the play action bombs at Tobias and Deion Colsey and Michael Mayer. I mean, this is a team that's built better for that than we've seen at Notre Dame in a long time because of the unique nature of their running backs. Because in the 80s and early 90s, Audric would have been a fullback.
100%.
He would have been a Jerome Bettis type of fullback, 1,000-yard runner as a fullback, a Ray Zellers type of fullback. There's no doubt about it. That would have been fun to watch. That would have been really fun to watch. A whole lot of fun to watch. So, anyway, All right. So that's going to do it for today's show, everybody. I want to appreciate everybody for being with us. We will be back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Sean Stiers and Vince D'Addario will have our countdown to kickoff, so do not miss that. Ryan and I and some others will be back for the post-game show after Notre Dame beats Boston College. I know I'm being a bit presumptuous there, but I think that they will. So we're going to do our best to stay warm tomorrow, at least myself and my wife. My wife's going to have to actually be outside shooting the game a little bit tomorrow, so she's going to do her best to be warm. I'll do my best to be warm walking into the stadium. And then, of course, Sunday night, we'll try our best to have our post-game show and make it all happen that way. So for Ryan, I'm Brian. Thanks, everybody. Like, subscribe, notifications, share, message boards, board.irishbreakdown.com, 5-star review. Check out the Built Bars. Great deal. Get 10% off your purchase. Check out the merch store. We've had a lot of people buying merch lately. Sold a lot of hoodies this month, Ryan. People getting ready for the cold weather. So I definitely want to get those as well. So everybody have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.